preface, I have endeavored in this ghostly little tale to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my listeners out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it by. Your faithful friend and servant, Charles Dickens. Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Stave 1. Marley's Ghost. Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole friend, and sole mourner. The mention of Marley's funeral brings me back to the point I started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards, above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley. He answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm. No wintry weather chill him. Nobody ever stopped him on the street with gladsome looks to say, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. No man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such a place of Scrooge. But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, upon a Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting, foggy weather. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters. "Ah, Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach. "Bah!" said Scrooge. "Humbug!"
"Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I am sure."
"I do. Out upon Merry Christmas. If I had my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should."
"Uncle!"
"Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it, but you don't keep it."
"Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you, much good it has ever done you."
There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say, Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round, as the only time I know of when men and women seem to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into the Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love, growled
Scrooge, as if that were the only one thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas.
Good afternoon.
Nay, Uncle, but you never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute, but I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last, so a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word, notwithstanding. The clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and now stood with their hats off in Scrooge's office.
"Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. "Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?"
"Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night."
"At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge," said the gentleman,
taking up a pen,
"it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir."
"Are there no prisons?"
"Plenty of prisons, but a few of us are endeavouring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. Well, we choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt, and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?"
"Nothing."
"You wish to be anonymous?"
"I wish to be left alone. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the prisons and the workhouses. They cost enough. And those who are badly off must go there."
"Oh, many can't go there, and many would rather die."
"If they would rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. It's not my business. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen."
Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue their point, the gentlemen withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labors with an improved opinion of himself, and in a more facetious temper than was usual with him. The cold became intense, foggier yet and colder, piercing, searching, biting cold. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool, tacitly admitted the fact to the expectant clerk in the tank, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
"You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose."
"If quite convenient, sir."
"It's not convenient and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound."
"Yes, sir."
"And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work."
It's only once a year, sir."
"A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning."
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl. The office was closed in a twinkling, and the clerk ran home to Camden Town as hard as he could pelt. Scrooge went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. The yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, was fain to grope with his hands. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. And then let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face. It was not angry or ferocious, but it looked at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up on its ghostly forehead. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, It was a knocker again. Up Scrooge went, not caring a button for its being very dark. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in, double-locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus, secured against surprise, he took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown, slippers, his nightcap, and sat down before the very low fire to take his gruel. As he threw his head back in the chair, Scrooge heard a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stair, then coming straight towards his door. It came on through the heavy door, and a specter passed into the room before his eyes. The same face, the very same. Marley. Though he looked the phantom through and through and saw it standing before him, though he felt the chilling influence of its death-cold eyes, he was still incredulous and fought against his senses. How now? What do you want with me? Much. Marley's voice, no doubt about it.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who are you then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Can you sit down?
I can.
Do it then.
Scrooge fell upon his knees and clasped his hands before his face. Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?
Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
I do. I must. You are fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it. Link by link and yard by yard, I girded it on of my own free will. And of my own free will, I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you, or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain.
Scrooge glanced about him on the floor, in the expectation of finding himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable, but he could see nothing.
I cannot tell you all I would. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me, in life, my spirit never roved beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing hole, and weary journeys lie before me.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Hear me. My time is nearly gone.
I will, but don't be hard upon me, Jacob, pray.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, a chance and hope of my procuring, Ebenezer. You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is that the chance and hope you mention, Jacob? I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow night when the bell tolls 1. Expect the 2nd on the next night at the same hour, the 3rd upon the next night, when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake. You remembered what has passed between us.
It walked backward from him, and at every step it took, the window raised itself a little so that when the specter reached it, it was wide open. Scrooge closed the window and examined the door by which the ghost had entered, It was double locked, as he had locked it with his own hands, and the bolts were undisturbed. Scrooge tried to say, "Humbug," but stopped at the first syllable. And being from the emotion he had undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the dull conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, much in need of repose, he went straight to bed without undressing, and fell asleep upon the instant.